Hello, good people out there in internet radio land, my fellow human beings. Welcome to my show, Gods and Goddesses. Good to have you listening in. And how are you all doing today? How have you been this last week? I'm doing okay. Right now, I'm in my backyard. The sun's setting over in the distance. And there's about another hour of sunlight. And then, you know, tomorrow is daylight savings time. I was just telling Doug, I bought a bunch of chocolate from the local grocery store, and my wife and I packed these little Ziploc bags, you know, the small bags where you stuffed about four pieces of chocolate, whether, you know, Almond Joy or Hershey's or Kit Kat or York, Mr. Goodberry, is that what it's called? But anyway, we've got about 150 bags sitting out here in the front in the driveway, and there's no one watching over them right now. I wrote on the, we've got two of little laundry baskets filled with these bags of chocolate on top of a styrofoam cooler, and I wrote, take one, happy Halloween. So they're going to be, hopefully, the trick-or-treaters are going to come by. The last few years, well, the years that I've lived here, they've always come by in a great number, lots of them, but because of COVID, maybe not so much this time. That's why we decided we'd get the little Ziploc bags, you know, instead of having them reach in there with their hands, you know, and maybe spreading the virus that way. Although, really, I'm a cautious person. I think it's okay to be cautious, but do I believe that? More than anything, I believe it's not transmitted solely by airborne means, but by food. That's what I believe. Or water supply. But anyway, during the show today, I'm going to read from one of my favorite books called Abduction to the Ninth Planet, or otherwise known as Diouba, the Golden Planet. But before I do, I just want to tell you a few things about my life, what happened this last week. It was a pretty slow week at work, except for yesterday, Friday. It got busy all of a sudden, and so me and my teammate, we were working hard all the way up until we got off and beyond. And I went and voted on Thursday, and I'm not ashamed to mention to you that I voted for Mr. Trump. Although I like Mr. Biden and Kamala, I would be very happy. Because, you know, I look at it maybe in a different way than you. I like both people. I like all people. And I don't like choosing sides, but it's like when you have some sons or daughters and you want to choose one as being the favorite. How do you handle that, you know? So it's like, I love Joe and Kamala, but I also love Mr. Trump. And one thing that factored into my decision-making was since day one, January the 17th, 2017, they ran an article in the Washington Post that they were going to find some way to impeach Mr. Trump even before he began working in the White House. Now, is that fair to you? And really, this is true. There was a lot of people that were trying to get him impeached even before he began working as president. Now, that's not fair. That really isn't. I mean, they got to know him a little bit from the primaries, you know, and then when he was elected president in November of 2016, and after that, they got to know him, and they didn't like what they saw. Then again, you know, America is made up of approximately 50% Democrats and Republicans. Isn't that amazing? And we can still get along together? I mean, it's really not an effective way to govern the country when you have political parties who are so strongly divided. I mean, you don't see eye to eye on a lot of stuff. And the competition is so bitter and backstabbing and throat cutting. And that immediately happens whenever one administration becomes elected, gets into power, the other party is automatically on their backs trying to knock them down. Now, we the people, and yes, we are 50% Republicans and Democrats, but we the people see through that, don't we? And we want a change, don't we? From the political parties, the competition that should be really looking out for the welfare of the people. Think of all the homeless people out there. Think of the people who don't have jobs, who are hungry, who don't have enough food. It's really sad that it has to happen in the United States of America when our founding fathers had a vision that this would be a country where we would have a great diversity of people, and indeed we do, but I'm sure they wouldn't have envisioned all the strife that we've got right now, and yet still things are pretty good. I can't, you know, I don't want to harp too much on the negative because there are a lot of positive things, and that's one thing that you'll see on the news stations, whatever news station you prefer to watch, listen to, whether it's CNN or Fox or whomever, is that they rarely, my friends, rarely say anything positive. Hey, people out there, come on now. Is that the way we're supposed to live? Isn't there something better? But anyway, we have to get along together, right? My wife and I, we get along. She's a Democrat. She voted Democrat. I voted Republican. I mean, I voted for three Democrats in the, you know, the listing. As I went through the different pages and chose my selections, there was three Democrats, one from my local district, which I'm a part of. Another one was the local tax assessor and a local sheriff. So I wasn't totally all Republican. And I might add that this is the first time I've voted Republican, majority Republican, since I don't know when. I think I voted for Ronald Reagan back in the 80s. I can't remember for sure, but I think I did. And then it was Clinton, and it was Al Gore, and it was John Kerry and Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. But my rationale is, among other things, I voted for Mr. Trump this time because, as I mentioned, they were out to get him from day one. The Russian collusion was a hoax, in my opinion. And the impeachment was unfair. A telephone call to President Zelensky and the idea of him threatening him, coercing him to try to investigate Joe Biden and his son, Hunter Biden. Isn't that ironic, really, how they picked that up again towards the these last few weeks, trying to make a difference in the election? But if they'd done that back when it happened, you know, that was grounds for impeachment. But all of a sudden, it's not. But when they asked President Zelensky, did you feel threatened or were you coerced by what Mr. Trump said? And I heard the telephone call. And he said, no. Of course, some people don't believe what other people say. Oh, he's lying because he wants to get money from the United States. Well, you don't know that for sure. So could it be that maybe you just don't believe a lot of people? If they've had a near-death experience, or they've seen an angel, or have had an extraterrestrial encounter, I don't believe them. They're just trying to get fame and fortune. I think, you know, there's a lot, too many doubting Thomases out there. Put your hands. Touch my marks on my hands and my feet. Put your hand in my side. Stop being a doubting Thomas. And on that subject, I was tuning into our church service last Sunday, and the chaplain, and may God bless them, they're good people. Their intentions are good. They have to do things by the book, you know, being military chaplains, of course. And I've heard a lot of great services, but this particular one, I won't mention any names. When I tuned in, I heard him talking about, and as I mentioned before, I should warn you, because I will test your faith by some of the things I say, that I don't believe 100% of what the Bible says. Most of it, but not all of it. And I'm entitled to my opinion, just like a Muslim is, or a Hebrew is, or any kind of religion, you know, Catholic, Vishnu, all the different religions in the world. They're all money-making businesses. Anyway, you know that, right? They're not really concerned about the truth, because there can only be one truth. Now, any logical person with any intelligence would have to agree that there is only one truth, and so somebody is wrong, right? Correct? But anyway, so I heard the chaplain say, "And God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son." I was like, stop! Stop! What does that make me? What does it make the rest of us? Are we the children of God or not? How could you said? How could you have said? Why did they put that in there? So God so loved the world, he sent his only son. No, we are the children of God. God, yes, Jesus was a son of God, but so am I. I'm a son of God. I am the truth, the light, and the way. I can say that. And you can say it too. I will also help you get to the Father by listening to my show, by listening to BBS Radio. It will also help you to get to the Father. You can help me too. But, you know, Jesus taught us to pray, our Father. Hello, our Father. Oh, sometimes these people, I must have patience, just like God has patience with all of us, our Creator, our Mother and Father God. So God, Jesus said, you will not get to the Father unless you go by me. Uh-uh. No, I disagree. That is wrong. Because think of maybe a family or families living on the Amazon River, tribes of indigenous natives, the Indians who had lived on our plains before the white man came here to America. Over in Siberia, there are parts all around the world, people have never even heard of Jesus Christ. And just because they didn't hear him, does that mean they're not going to heaven? No. Jordan fades back, shoots, swish, game over. That phrase is not applicable. It is not true. You can get to the Father through many other ways, and the mother too. Yes. Myself, like Ruby, I really don't have any religious preference. But I am a man of universal truth. I believe not in religion as the ultimate way of getting to know your spiritual self, but just a stepping stone, finding our way there. Now, everything I've said so far has made sense, right? I mean, it's logical. You can't refute that. No one can. And I was talking about my wife and I, how we get along together. She's a Catholic. I'm no religious preference. She's a Democrat. I'm a Republican, at least for this time. Anyway, she eats everything. I'm a vegan vegetarian. And we get along. So, hey, after this election is all over, I know that you can get along with each other too, right? We can all get along. It's all fine. We live another day. Tomorrow's not guaranteed, right? Tomorrow is not guaranteed for any of us. The Creator is in control. You know, a lot of people are dying right now, and you're not invincible. So wake up and smell the roses. Some of you out there who need to gain some intelligence in certain areas without saying anything worse than that. But you know, I love you, and thanks for listening in. We are all co-creator gods in the making, although some of us are young souls. You young souls out there are stubborn, not open-minded, closed-minded, not logical, illogical. But I'm not perfect either. I don't know if I'm an advanced soul. That's a tongue twister. And advanced soul, and advanced. But I don't remember any of my past lives, which I know I've had, but for a good reason. We're born into this world through the river of oblivion, and all of our memories of our past lives are erased for a specific reason, a good reason. That is so we won't freak out, and because this planet is of a very specific learning environment. We have to learn basic social values, among other things. And with a memory of our past lives, we just couldn't fulfill the requirements, if you will, of living in a world like this. And also, another attribute of the soul is knowing what's going to happen in the future. When you're born into this world, you get to see what your life will be like until the day you die. Now, isn't that amazing? And you can preview that before being born into this world, because we did exist before we were born in the spirit and soul. You know, soul is the brain of the spirit. So some of these flashes that we have during our lifetime, when we remember, hey, I was here before, oh, I remember that. Hey, we're going to go around the bend here, and there should be a little house over on the left with a chimney smokestack, you know. Sure enough, you go around the corner, there it is. How did you know that? Because it's called deja vu, but really, it's just a part of your preview of your life that wasn't erased, so to speak. Understood? Oh, there's so much to talk about, and time flies by quickly. And speaking about flying by quickly, you know, I've talked about in my previous shows running, how I like to run. I love to run because it's good exercise for the heart and the lungs. And so I've come to a conclusion. I've determined that running on a track is not a very good thing. I'm talking about the rubber 440, you know, 400-meter track. There's something wrong with that. Besides going around and around in circles and it being very boring and having the same scenery, but I think also because the track is made of rubber, and when you go around in circles, there's more pressure on one leg than the other, and my left foot there just then kind of takes the, because I've been starting to run around in a clockwise direction, but most people run in the counterclockwise direction. And so it has affected me, and affected my sleeping even, and I think it might be one of the causes of my sleep apnea. And I'm hard at work trying to determine, you know, what's going on, what I need to do to stop these sleep apnea symptoms, you know, that millions of Americans have, you know what I'm saying? I'm not the only one. But anyway, so yes, I voted. I got that out of the way. I waited until the day before early voting ended. And, oh, I didn't finish what I was going to say. And I do that a lot sometimes. Forgive me, please. But I know I've got lots of good things to say. You don't mind if I go off on a tangent every once in a while and then lose my way? Because after all, this is my show. You can get your own show, too. It's great. Be able to talk for 1 hour. You can talk about anything. So now my favorite way of running is on a dirt track. A dirt track. It's a 1 mile. There's this 1 mile track on Lackland Air Force Base, and it's dirt. It's through the woods. It's beautiful. Maybe not so good at nighttime because I've been around it before at nighttime, and you've got these huge wild hogs that come out, coyotes. You know, they can be very dangerous to human beings. And yes. Hold on, please. I'm going to take a drink of water. So, on this dirt track, it's 1 mile. I did 2 laps today, but I did the walk-run method. Jeff Galloway, Galloway. Check him out on the internet. It's a good way of running because usually when you run for long distances, your body kind of suffers afterwards, especially when you get to be my age, 66. And so this is a good way of doing it. Once upon a time, when I was young, I used to be able to run 8, 10, 13 miles, a half marathon, ran a couple of half marathons, never ran a full marathon. But now I'm older. I need something which is less stressful on my body, and so it repairs itself more quickly. And that is the walk-run method. It's good. Plus, you know, I donated one of my kidneys to my son. I've only got one kidney. And I fractured my spine sometime during my life, probably from a hyperextension injury. In other words, slipping on ice. And I remember that. I've done that a few times. I used to play hockey. So, the dirt track. What I like about the dirt track. Hey, have you seen the movie McFarland USA? Watch it. It's a movie about running, about this team of Hispanic high school students who rose to fame in the 80s with a victory at the first, or not the first, but one of the California State cross-country championships. And Kevin Costner is in that movie. He's one of my favorite actors. How about you? You like Kevin Costner? I'll take another drink of water here. That's a really good movie. And cross-country, running cross-country is different than running on a track. It's different than running on a road, on asphalt or concrete. One thing is that I've been able to determine is that you're looking down and up all the time while running. You know, you're making sure you're not running in a dirt rut or hitting a rock on the road. And I believe that's a good thing. But when you're like on a track, when your head is straight, looking straight ahead, that I don't think is natural. If you do a lot of miles on a track, when your head up looking straight ahead for miles and miles and miles, then you go live your life doing your normal things, getting in your car, out of your car, walking around the grocery store, going to church, whatever, you know. It's just not natural to have your head stuck in a straight ahead mode. You know, not looking to the left or to the right or down or up. So I think running on a dirt track is what I'm going to make my way of running from now on. If I have to run, I'm going to that track. I don't like running on the street outside my house here, around the neighborhood. You're competing with cars. You're jumping up and down on curbs, you know, down, up and down. On a curb, down from a curb, and there's dogs in the neighborhood, you know, can run at you, attack you. So altogether, it's better to run on a dirt trail. And you know what I heard also? That some of the big runners today, the marathon runners, the well-known, famous runners, you know how they practice? They don't run, do like miles and miles on asphalt or concrete roads. No, they run on the trails. In the backwoods. That's how they get their practice. Anyway, so the sun has almost gone down. I wonder if there are any trick-or-treaters. I mentioned to you, I put those two laundry baskets filled with those Ziploc bags with about four or five pieces of chocolate inside each. I thought I'd splurge a little bit this year, you know, because we've been through a rough time with COVID, and give the children a treat, you know. So they have a good little bit of chocolate there to chew on from the Ruby family. Compliments to the Ruby family. Play they won't take more than one bag, but they might. That's okay. But after my show's over, I'll go out there and see what's happening. I'll have to put my mask on and see what it's like. Should be getting dark here pretty soon. I think around 7 o'clock, 6:25 right now, so I've got 35 minutes to go. Time does fly. So I think I'll begin to read here. One thing, I write down these little notes, and I might recommend, suggest that everybody, if you haven't done so in a while, go and look at the stars tonight. And when the sun goes down and it becomes dark and the stars spring into existence, there are so many of them out there. I think I mentioned this on a previous show. You know, there are so many stars that if we could see all of them, And we can only see some of them because of the atmosphere, you know. But if you were to go into outer space, like on one of the NASA spaceships, you know, or SpaceX, or in the past, you know, they had the Apollo and Gemini, Mercury spaceships. But once you get into the Earth's orbit in outer space, free from the Earth's atmosphere, you can see a lot more stars. It's like going to the desert at night. Reminds me of that song. I know so many songs. I know somebody. He goes one called Peaceful Easy Feeling. And the first part of it goes like this. I like the way your sparkling earrings lay against your skin so brown. And I want to sleep with you in the desert tonight with a million stars all around. And I got a peaceful, easy feeling. And I know you won't let me down, 'cause I'm already standing on the ground. So a million stars all around. But did you know that if you could see every star that's out there, there wouldn't be a single square inch in the evening sky that wouldn't have at least 100 stars in it. There's so many out there. Can you imagine that? Isn't our Creator amazing? So I'm going to talk a little bit about from this book, that is, read from the book about this man, Michael Desmarquette. He has since passed away. May God bless his soul there in heaven. He claims he was taken to a planet within our Milky Way galaxy, one of the three most advanced civilizations, technologically and spiritually. And these human beings, if you will, are very tall. They're like transgender to both male and female, otherwise known as hermaphrodites. They're very beautiful, perfection in every way, all about them, their hair, their teeth. Nothing imperfect about them. Amazing beings, extremely, extremely intelligent. Their spaceships are circular. They weren't always. I think they used to have the flying saucer boat type of spaceship. But the ones they have now are circular, about 70 meters in diameter. And they can travel at many times the speed of light by going interdimensional. You know, they take advantage of wormholes and black holes, and they know how to warp space, you know, and they get going so fast that they have these tiny guns on the outside of the spacecraft that shoot antimatter particles so that any kind of object they come in contact with is immediately obliterated, you know. You have to, traveling at that speed. And Einstein was correct when he said nothing is faster than the speed of light in the material universe, but when you transcend the material universe and go into kind of like a parallel spiritual universe that's governed by thought only, then you can traverse great distances of the universe in a very short amount of time. Anyway, so this man, Michael Desmarquette, was living in Australia around the late 1980s, and he was taken, beamed up aboard. Well, he wasn't actually beamed up on board their spaceship right away. He was beamed up into a parallel universe, which exists. That's what I was talking about. Apparently, there's almost like an alternate reality along with this world, and it might be. I'm a little bit confused. I don't know all the answers in this regard. But he said that when he got up there and he met this extraterrestrial and he saw the spaceship, there were some beings there that's been there for thousands of years, you know, like these caveman kind of creatures with humanoid with huge clubs and kind of like barbarians, you know, just animals. And then there are some people like remember the Bermuda Triangle? You know, the Bermuda Triangle and the airplanes that have disappeared in it, and the ships that have disappeared in it, people that have disappeared in it. Well, apparently in the Bermuda Triangle, there's like that intertwining of the two dimensions, you know, where they meet together and something is created that can draw people and objects into that alternate reality, that parallel universe, if you will. And I think, you know, not only is it spiritual in a way that it's not, the objects there are not material. I'm not sure about that. That's what I'm confused about. But anyway, he talks about it in the book, and it's very interesting what he experiences, what he goes through there, because the extraterrestrial had to kill some of these cavemen type of people, and women too. And so they were liberated from their physical body and then rejoined the spirit world, you know, and their spirit and soul, and continued their existence that way. But anyway, so I'm going to read from this book. It's an amazing book. You should buy it. Everyone should read it. It's my Bible, if you will. I love it. I've read it 10 times or more. I always refer to it, and they're out there, you know, the extraterrestrials, they're out there. And I've proven it to you before. I'll prove it to you again really quickly. The big question on everyone's mind is there life out there? So the logic is this way, and you might have heard me say it before. I'm going to say it again for the benefit of all the new people who might have been listening and joining my show for the first time. I will prove to you through logic that there is life out there. We don't need NASA to go and find it and bring it back. We don't need a spaceship to land in our backyard or anywhere else to prove that there is life out there. And I do mean all types of life, to include sentient life, like beings like us, sentient life forms. So the logic is this. All this life here on Earth happened by accident. And I mean, there's so many different types of life here. Oh my God, over a million types of insects, 30,000 types of fish, over 10,000 types of birds, reptiles, 9,000 types of amphibians, over 5,000 types of mammals, all the trees and flowers, fruits and vegetables, of all that happened by accident. Logically, and no one can refute this, it could happen by accident elsewhere, anywhere in the universe. But if there is a creator that created all of that, that creator who had the knowledge and the power to create all this life here on Earth, logically, would have the power and the knowledge to create any type of life anywhere in the universe. One of our dogs just came out. She's going out to do her thing in the backyard. Her name is Goldie, and she's an American Pit Bull Terrier. But anyway, so there, and she'll be going back in just a minute, so I got to let her in. But anyway, so there is life out there. Sometimes, my friends, you just have to bridge the gap between belief and knowledge with logic. You know what I'm saying? Belief and knowledge. Bridge the gap. I just proved to you with logic that there is life out there. You don't need, and I learned it from other people, so I'm just passing it on to you. There is life out there. Rejoice. Because all of a sudden that makes the world a better place. I think, in my opinion, let me just rephrase that. I think having the knowledge for everyone to know without a doubt that there is life out there would indeed make the world a better place. Agreed? Because then we would know God is more real. And a lot of people have difficulty believing that God is real nowadays in this world. Young souls, intermediate souls, advanced souls still struggle with the idea that God is real. But indeed, God is real. The creator of the universe who initiated the Big Bang is very real. A power beyond comprehension, my friends. Really, magical to the nth degree. A beautiful, incredible, wonderful energy force that is so intelligent, extremely intelligent, knows everything about you, can create anything, anywhere. Agreed? Yeah? Good? Or you think you're a God? you are a God in the making. If you can die, answer me this question. Can you die? Is it possible for you to die? I'm not saying anything morbid or negative here. I'm just saying, is it a possibility? If the answer is yes, then you are a God in the making. There's no other reason why you're here on planet Earth other than to go through this school that you're a part of, we're all a part of, this university of the universe, where you learn your basic social values. And then when you transition, when we transition to the spiritual lands, the spiritual realm, heaven, if you will, the other side, then you will enjoy, hopefully, if you were good, right? If you did lots of good acts of kindness, even just small acts of kindness, if you were friendly, if you were kind, if you were generous, if you cared about your fellow man, if it hurt you to see somebody who was in pain, if you came upon an accident and you risked your life to save somebody, that's the kind of thing God's looking for that will help you graduate from this category one planet and evolve to a higher category so that you can continue your evolution through the process of reincarnation to be able to live on any planet out there in the universe. And there's a lot of them, okay? Now, don't be unintelligent on me, okay? You have to increase your intelligence and realize that there are many, many habitable planets and others that are, when I say habitable, I mean for human beings, but there's so many different species out there in the universe. And each one is indigenous to their planet and their atmospheric conditions. They could have skin that's like bark or scaly skin. They could have hair that's like feathers. They could have one eye in the middle of the forehead, you know, like a cyclops. They could be tall. They could be short. They could be wide. They could have blue-colored skin, green teeth. They're out there. You know what I'm saying? They are. The only thing that's holding us back is, I think, the number one reason that they haven't made contact with us is because, and they probably say to themselves, these human beings on Earth, they don't even believe there's life elsewhere in the universe. How dumb can you get? Why should we make contact with them when they don't even believe that there's life out there? And indeed, you know, we've evolved over the years. You know, at one time we thought the world was flat. Another time we thought that the world was the center of the universe and everything revolved around it. And now we're kind of stuck in a gap. We don't know if there's really life out there. But there are so many millions of people that have had either seen a UFO, a flying saucer, or had an extraterrestrial encounter. Millions of people around the world throughout the years, you know, throughout the centuries. So it might not be you, but there are people who have had an experience like that, and it changes their life. And that we can't ignore. That is evidence that is very important. And to ignore it, it just means probably your young soul. And you will learn on that day of judgment when we all transition to that other side, as I mentioned, you will have a life review. You'll be able to review every single second in your life, all the harm that you may have caused people, the good things too, but you realize where you went wrong in certain areas, how you treated your fellow human being badly, things that you could have done differently. And maybe you'll have so much regret and remorse afterwards. If I only could have done this, if only I had known, if only I could have done whatever. I think that is pretty much the norm nowadays. Rarely you see someone who exceeds, excels, graduates from this existence with honor, so to speak. And how do you do that? You develop yourself spiritually. Religion is a stepping stone, as I mentioned, but it's not the ultimate way of getting there. That's my way of putting it. It is not the spiritual university, or it doesn't give you everything you need to know from the spirituality standpoint. It is a money-making business, you know? So they're not really interested in teaching you the truth of everything. I need more details myself. Anyway, I'm going to take a drink of water. be all end all. That's what I was thinking of. I believe that's how the expression goes. Anyway, I'm doing on time. I've got 19 minutes left. Let me start reading. Let me put my tripod up here, my phone on the tripod. I like using the phone. I don't like using earphones. I tried, but there's something about earphones that kind of slows me down. I don't know. That's my preference. What about you? But anyway, so here we go. I love reading out loud. There's power in reading out loud. They should teach children of all ages in school to read out loud. It will help them with their public speaking, help them to get over their nervousness, their fear of public speaking. I went through that myself. If only my teachers, when I was young, had known this simple rule, reading out loud in front of a class is good for a person, then I would have probably wound up differently than I am today. But I found that since. So I found that it is very beneficial. Check it out on the internet. Type in the benefits of reading out loud. I've got a book in my hands. You can do it over your computer, but I like the book because my eyes get tired from the glare of a computer. I might have to take my time reading this a little bit so my eyes can focus. So this man, Michael Desmarquette, he's on their planet. They're flying around one of these little anti-gravity platforms, flying at great speeds, about 200 meters above the ground. It's a very beautiful planet. It's a planet of the highest category, which means it's not like Earth. Earth is a planet of a category 1. This planet that he was on is a category 9. So at the top, there's 9 planets in each solar system. There's supposed to be 9 planets. Sometimes they lose one or gain one, but ultimately they revert back to the number 9. Number 9 is the number of the universe. Number 9. Anyway, so their planet as a category 9 planet is just a veritable paradise. Animals don't eat each other. Everything lives in harmony. Everything's pristine and pure. The water, the air, the trees are super large, 600 feet tall. The birds, the insects are large, huge. Butterflies have like a 5 feet wingspan. And it's just the air is beautiful. And the colors are more intense. He had to wear a mask to cover his eyes because there was too much brightness for his eyes to handle. It would make him kind of like punch drunk, you know? Read that book. It's an awesome book, Abduction to the Ninth Planet. So here it goes. Thio, one of the extraterrestrials, his name Thio, T-H-A-O, flew us over a plane on which I could see animals of all sorts. Some were two-legged and resembled little ostriches. Others were four-legged creatures, similar to mammoths, but twice as big. I also watched cows graze side by side with hippopotamuses. Okay, one of our dogs just came back in. I had to close the door. The cows were so similar to those we have on Earth, I couldn't help but remark on it to Thio, pointing, as I did so, at a particular herd, just like an excited child at a zoo. She laughed heartily. Why shouldn't we have cows here, Michael? Look over there, and you'll see donkeys, and there are giraffes, although they are somewhat taller than on Earth. See how lovely those horses are as they run together? I was thrilled, but wasn't I constantly thrilled by this experience? Sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less. What really rendered me speechless to the amusement of my friends was the sight of horses bearing the heads of very pretty women, some blonde, others auburn or brown, and even some with blue hair. As they galloped, they would often soar for tens of meters. Ah, yes. In fact, they had wings folded back against their bodies, which they made use of from time to time. Something like the flying fish which follow or precede ships. They lifted their heads to see us and tried to rival the speed of the Ladybot. That's the thing that they were flying on. Isn't this really amazing? Horses with wings, with heads of human beings. It's possible the Creator can create anything, don't forget. Thio reduced speed and altitude, enabling us to approach within several meters of them. There were more surprises ahead of me. as some of these horse women cried out to us in a language that was recognizably human. My three companions answered in the same language, and the exchange, obviously, a pleasant one. We didn't linger long at that low altitude, however, as some of the horsewomen soared to such heights they almost touched our vehicle, thereby making injury to themselves, risking injury to themselves. The plain we flew over was, in places, embossed with small knolls, all of about the same size. I remarked on them, and the Astra explained that millions of years ago, these knolls had been volcanoes. The vegetation below us had none of the exuberance of the forest I had experienced on my arrival. I was telling you about where you saw a butterfly with a 5-foot wingspan. On the contrary, here the trees were grouped in small stands, reaching no more than 25 meters in height. As we passed, large white birds took flight by the hundreds, only to land again a safe distance away. A wide watercourse flowed to the horizon, dissecting the plain with its lazy wanderings. I could make out small docos, which were like these eggs. Their houses looked like eggs, and like half an egg above the ground. And you could go through the walls, like the walls where you could just walk through them at a certain point, like they, what it showed on the outside, but they were made of some kind of molecules where your body could pass right through it, you know? And once you got on the inside, then when you looked out, you didn't see the exterior of the building. It was kind of an amazing effect, apparently, where you could see everything. Yet on the outside, you saw what looked like a half an egg shape. So he said, I can make up some small docos, or eggs, in other words, grouped together on the bend of the river. Thio guided the Ladivok above the river, reducing altitude to water level as we approached the settlement. We landed in a small square between two docos and were immediately surrounded by the inhabitants. They didn't scramble or push to get near us. Rather, they stopped what they were doing and calmly approached us. They formed a circle large enough to be comfortable and for all to have equal opportunity to see an alien face to face. Again, it struck me that these people all seemed to be of the same age, apart from about half a dozen that could have been older. Age here did not detract, but added a quality of surprising nobility. I had also been struck by the absence of children on the planet, and yet in this settlement and among the crowd that approached, I saw 6 or 7 of them. They were charming and appeared to be quite level-headed for children. According to Thio, they would have been 8 or 9 years old. Since my arrival on Thio Uba, I had not yet had occasion to meet so great a number of these people. Glancing around the circle, I could appreciate a calmness and reserve about them, as well as the great beauty in their faces that I'd grown to expect. There was a strong resemblance between them, as if they were all brothers and sisters, and yet, isn't that our first impression when we encounter a group of blacks or Asians together? In fact, the same physical variety in facial features existed among these people, as exists within races on Earth. Isn't that amazing? In height, they varied from 280 to 300 centimeters, about 9 feet tall. Their bodies being so well proportioned, they were a pleasure to behold, neither too muscly nor too puny, and without deformity of any kind. Their hips were somewhat larger than you would expect in a man, but then I've been told that some of them give birth to children. All possessed magnificent heads of hair, most of a golden blonde color, others platinum blonde or copper blonde, and occasionally a bright chestnut color. There were also some like Thio and Biastra. Biastra is the name of one of the other ETs, with a fine down of hair on the upper lip. But apart from this, these people had absolutely no other body hair. This is not, of course, an observation that I'd made at the time, but one which I made later when I had occasion to see in quite near a group of naked sunbathers. Their skin type reminded me of Arab women who protect themselves from the sun. It was certainly not the pale skin typical of blondes with such light eyes. So light indeed were the mauve and blue eyes around me that I might have wondered if they were blind had I been on earth. When I speak now of their long legs and rounded thighs, they reminded me of our female long-distance runners, as well as their beautifully proportioned breasts, firm and shapely in every case. The reader will understand my error in believing Thio to be a female giant when first we met. It occurred to me that women on earth would be most envious of the breasts of these people, and men would be most delighted by them. I have already commented on the beauty of Thio's face, and others in the crowd had similar classic features. Still, others I would describe as charming or alluring. Each face, though slightly different in shape and features, seemed to have been designed by an artist. Each had been given its own unique charm, but above all, the quality most evident in their faces and in their manner and deportment was the quality of intelligence. In all, I could find no fault with these people who grouped around us, beaming smiles of welcome, which revealed rows of perfect white teeth. This physical perfection did not surprise me, since Thio had explained their ability to regenerate their body cells at will. There was no reason, therefore, that these magnificent bodies should age. Are we interrupting them in their work? I asked Bayastra, who happened to be by my side. No, not really, she replied. Most of the people... in the book, it gets cut off here, so I'm going to have to start a new sentence. They made a mistake in the publishing. Three of the elders approached, and Thio asked that I address them in French, and loudly enough for everyone to hear. I believe I said, I'm very happy to be among you and to be able to admire your wonderful planet. You are fortunate people, and I myself would like to live among you. This speech released a concert of exclamations, not only on account of the language, which most of them had never heard spoken, but also for the sense of what I had said, which had been telepathically communicated. The Astra signaled we should follow the three elders, who led us into one of the docos. When the seven of us were comfortably installed, Thio began. Michael, I would like to introduce you to Leisha Nussi. She held her hand towards one of the three, and I bowed. Leisha Nussi was, about 14,000 of your years ago, the last king of the continent Mu on Earth, otherwise known as Lemuria. In the Pacific Ocean, just like Atlantis, this is known as Mu. That was known as Mu, or Lemuria. I don't understand, said Michael. You don't want to understand, Michael, and at this particular moment, you resemble many of your peers on Earth. I must have looked troubled, for Thio, Biastra, and Latoli, the other ET, laughed loudly. Don't look like that, Michael. I just meant to jostle you a little. Now, in the presence of Leisha Nussi, I'm going to explain one of the mysteries that elude many experts on your planet, who, I might add, would be better to devote their precious time discovering more useful things. I'm going to unveil not one... Well, I've got 1 minute, my friends. That's it from the book. Abduction from the Ninth Planet, or Thio Uba, the Golden Planet, an amazing book. I recommend it, highly recommend it. So it's been good. Thank you for listening to my show. I wish you peace and happiness in this next week. May the creator of the universe bless you and look after you and protect you. And may the creator of the universe, if it is the creator's will, get rid of the COVID disease on our planet. Please, creator. So I love you. And take care. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.